Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, welcome to the Doghouse episode 400 and something billion, because there's more Doghouse episodes than people that have landed on the moon.
Or probably listened to us.
yeah, maybe. Who knows? We probably pissed off a lot of people the last couple weeks, although they refused to send us hate mail, so we're going to keep doing stuff.
You got a couple on Facebook.
Yeah, a couple, you
know. And you did get a couple on email.
Yeah, but not enough, right? Not enough that unless those are our eight listeners, right?
Well, I said we got more shows than listeners.
That could be. I'm not even gonna argue that. Ken's not with us this week. He's actually in training for his trip around the moon, which we're gonna be talking about in a little bit.
Yeah.
So anyways, I wanna tell you an interesting story that happened to me today when I got to the studio. Because, you know, I'm a good guy, and I like to think I'm a good guy. And I showed up to the studio, and I said to Warren, happy birthday. And he goes, what? How did you know? And I said, I just know these things. And I said, Warren, what do you want for your birthday? And he goes, Five Guys. So I took him over to the restaurant for Five Guys, but that's not what he meant. Happy birthday, Warren.
Thank you,
you Bill. Old geezer.
Thank you. Yes, I am definitely. I'm on the downward slope now.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm not as far down the hill as Ken is.
Remember, like we were talking about the other day about how we were talking about riders getting old?
Yes.
Do you not remember that? Senior moment.
What?
I'm gonna have fun today.
Where?
Who? What?
Who am I?
But no, speaking of, you know, Ken, it's still dark at night, and old people don't like driving in the dark, so that's why Ken's not here this week. Because he's like 70, right? He turned 70 this year?
Oh, man, I thought he was 77.
No, 102, right? I think he was born in 1915.
Wait a minute. Isn't he the same age as our number of shows?
No. He's much older than that. That's everything. Yeah, Ken's not here. Warren is, but he kind of forgot where he was going. I found him like walking around the street, being all senile moment.
What?
It's that old timer's disease.
Where?
Yeah, pretty much. Anyways, Warren, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I'd have cheering sound effects set up.
I didn't even know you knew it was my birthday.
I know everything. Warren, nothing gets by me. Nothing gets by me. You know, I kind of feel weird. 2 weeks ago, I was your Valentine's Day date for dinner. Now I'm your birthday dinner date.
This is kind of bothersome.
Apparently, Warren owns my ass. Right?
This is a little bothersome. I don't like the trend here.
Yeah, no, I'm not digging this at all. When's our anniversary? That's what I need to know. Woo! I know there'll be mail about that. Anyways, I wanted to talk about the news. What's going on in the news? First off, rant, and then we got to talk SpaceX.
All right. And I got some motorcycle stuff later.
Okay.
So for all you guys that are out there
wanting the motorcycle show. No, we do have some motorcycle stuff.
I bring the bikes.
But SpaceX is huge.
This is cool. This is definitely cool.
I want to throw a rant. No one cares what happens at the Oscars because no one watched.
No, right? I didn't.
You did that shtick to try and get people to watch it where you did the Steve Harvey. It was funny when Steve did it. It just shows you how weak and sorry you people are. That was my rant. I'm done with them. I didn't watch.
Well,
I've
never been up with them. I mean, that kind of stuff just has zero appeal to me. Never will.
Yeah, not a big fan. So SpaceX, Elon Musk, right? He brought us bad things like the Tesla.
Well, right? Some people like it.
Yeah, I know. It's, you know, it's probably one day going to be like groundbreaking and cool, but not to me right now. But he brought us the Tesla, and he's brought to us this SpaceX.
Which is much, much cooler than the electric car.
Way cooler than the electric car. So much cooler than the electric car, it's not even funny. And, you know, SpaceX has been doing stuff for the government. You know, and they've been doing all these rocket landings, yeah,
making
and stuff,
making deliveries to the space station, and then re-landing the rocket launcher.
And I'm pretty sure Elon Musk paid out of pocket for that show on what was it?
Mars.
Yeah, Mars on Nat Geo.
Yep.
Right. I mean, it kind of looked like he paid out of pocket for it. And
well, when you got that kind of money, you can pretty much do what you want.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I got to give you credit. You know, SpaceX. He put the seed money in, but they have to make their own profits on this. So the object is to make getting into space profitable for a private company.
Yeah.
And he's heading that direction.
Yeah, you know, well, and that's been the goal, is to privatize it. and stuff. And he's done a lot of cool things, and he's always talked about colonizing Mars, colonizing Mars. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, out of the blue, now, last week, they talked about, and we weren't in studio. That was my fault we weren't in studio.
Yes, it was.
I had an aunt that passed away, and I had to go home for a funeral. But we weren't in studio, and during last week, NASA came out and said, yay, hooray, we found 7 Earth-like planets 40 million light years away.
Right? I don't think SpaceX is going to get there anytime soon.
Who knows, right? Maybe they know something we don't know.
That'd be pretty remarkable to be able to pull that one off.
It'd be cool as hell. I don't think we'll see it in my lifetime, but you never know.
They are going to try to do something within the next 2 years.
But Elon Musk is like, look, I got some rich friends, and they want to go around the moon. So it looks like it's going to be Elon Musk, 2 rich guys, and probably a pilot for a week-long trip out further than any NASA, than anybody has ever been before. Like Star Trek, boldly go.
They are boldly going. And they're going where no man has been before. Or yeah. Woman.
Well, further than anybody's been away from the planet.
Yeah. It's going to be a big loop around the moon.
This is cool.
It is. It is very cool.
This is like...
Well, have you... But if and everyone who's listening, if you haven't seen this yet, you need to go to YouTube and watch it. It's just cool the way they're able to re-land the rocket launchers.
Yes.
So they'll launch the rocket, it'll shoot off this, up into the space, and then instead of falling into the ocean, it glides itself back down to where it launched from. And there's plenty of videos showing it coming, if you launch it in Cape Canaveral, guiding itself, and then re-landing on its pedestal at Cape Canaveral.
Yeah.
It is just awesome to watch.
Yeah. I mean, that is...
They've even done it on a boat off the Pacific Coast.
I was going to say... They've done it on a boat. It's pretty badass. It is really cool. The technology and stuff they're using. He had like a replica, I guess, of the rocket that he's going to send the people in. It's kind of cool.
Replica or a model? Replica would be awful big to be carrying around.
It was big. It was pretty big. He was standing in front of
it. Well, maybe it was a replica.
It could have been the whole thing, right? What do I know? I'm just an idiot. But they're talking about 2018, the end of 2018. We're talking a year and a half from now?
Yes. I think that's a little bit optimistic to get that done that quick.
Cash talks.
Cash talks, I know.
Cash talks. And I got to imagine...
Even if it goes to 24 or 28 months, that'd still be pretty dang good.
Right. I mean, that's still quick, right?
Yeah.
But I got to imagine, what do you think the price is?
Oh, more than you and I will ever have combined for one person.
$200? $300? I mean, I'm thinking, I remember some Russian guy paid, I think, $20 million to go into space.
Right. And that was just up into space, an orbit or two, then back down.
Yeah. I'm thinking 100 mil.
Every bit of it, if not more.
Yeah. I'm thinking I got to hear a number, 100 mil, maybe a 150 mil.
So that'd be Musk is not going to charge himself. So that's only $200 million for a round trip. I bet you it's going to be more than that now to think about it.
I don't know. Because at 200 mil, it's affordable. At 100 mil a person, it's affordable.
For some folks.
For people that have the money, right? If you start getting too much, you won't do many trips.
Well, the first one's always going to be more expensive because they got to, iron out the kinks.
Yeah, they're going to send. They're actually going to send an unmanned one.
So that's the one you're going to be on.
I'm hoping so. They're supposed to send an unmanned one that's going to go around and do it all not robotically controlled, but all automated.
Automation.
Like Skynet, Warren's whole Skynet thing, right?
All hell, our robot overlords.
And I'm. It's worth having robot overlords if we can go around the moon, right? I'm hoping they get enough of these people at 100 million that they can raffle off like one person for $20.
A charity case,
right? I'd almost be okay with leaving me out there.
I tell you what, man, I'll give you cancer somehow so you can make that your make-a-wish.
I probably already have that.
Oh, you probably do.
or something. That's badass. I hope the guys that are doing it come forward so we can know who it is.
Oh, they'll have to eventually.
And I really hope they say how much it is, right? Because there's a bunch of people with $100 million that can do this.
See, it's going to be Simon Cowell and Cher.
Well, then I'm rooting against the mission. Let's not do that, right? Let's do people we want. That would be... That's like every sci-fi dream coming true, right? If they can pull that off in 2 years, maybe we can be on Mars in 10.
Well, they just...
By 2030.
They just had a... within the last 6 or 8 weeks, they had a big conference for space settlement.
Yeah.
And some folks I know went to it, and they said it was some good stuff coming out of it.
I keep thinking, you always see these companies that are selling an acre of Mars for 15 grand. $5,000, $10,000 an acre.
Yeah,
of Mars.
I've seen that, and you buy your own star too,
right? I was thinking about buying a couple acres on Mars. Yeah,
they don't have any authority to sell anything. It's a scam.
Yeah, but if I got paperwork, the way the courts are here, right?
You could try it, but I can't see it actually working.
I want the first company that shoots a rocket to Mars that hits Mars and plants like a flag, like "Welcome to our development." That's the guy I'm buying with.
This is our new subdivision.
welcome to Mars Homes by Lake Mare. I don't know. But yeah, I'm all about this. I am excited, right? We found new planets, rocky planets with maybe water or at least ice on them. 40 million light years away. That's not that far. Or 40 light years away, right? Not 40 million.
Well,
40 light years away.
Yeah, it's a long, long ways. 40,
it is, 40, but it's 40, not.
40 light years is a long, long ways away.
You know, when I watch Star Trek, they do that in like 30, 45, one commercial break.
Yeah.
Right?
We're not there yet. We don't have warp drive yet.
We will be. Elon Musk will figure it out.
I do know where warp drive actually is. You can get to it off of...
I've actually driven down warp drive off of 28 there.
Yeah, off of 28. Sterling.
I think that's Chantilly, right?
That's right. Sterling, Chantilly, Reston.
It's all the same town, but if you're ever in the D.C. area, you want to do warp drive, you just drive down 28. You'll see a big sign that's like, warp drive.
It takes you to one of Elon's competitors, Orbital Inc., takes you into their building, and they named their exit Warp Drive.
That's awesome.
It is.
I wanted to name the road up to my house Snail Trail, but...
Well, you can if you want.
Nah, I can't. It's too rocky. but yeah, I'm totally all about this. Lots of cool things are happening in the space sciences, like astronomy.
Yeah, I think we're on the verge of another first step moment.
I hope so. I really, you know, one of the things over the last, 25, 30 years is I feel like we went to the moon on calculator technology.
Shoot, it was barely that.
Right. And what have you done for me lately, NASA? Oh, we got people in the International Space Station. Oh, don't care.
They're doing good science.
They're laying
a foundation. But the foundation has been laid for a while now, and... You know, NASA has been all geeked up about, you know, teaching, you know, diversity and a bunch of other, and global warming and
don't care.
That's never been their job.
Your job is to put people on Mars so that we can go rescue Matt Damon.
Yeah, when a significant portion of your budget is something other than space exploration. Now, I know it says National Aeronautics and Space Administration. I know this aeronautics is in their name. Yeah, and they've got a supersonic jet they're working on, but still, space exploration is what Americans want to see.
Right, you know, I mean, that's the beauty about space is, like, you know, if somebody says, it's going to take $40 billion to build a wall across Mexico, the whole country goes, ah, no, boo, you know, people are yelling and screaming, too much money, right? But if NASA came out and was like, yo, for $5 trillion, we think we can hit a meteor with a space shuttle and get some things, we're all like, yeah, man, write the check. You know, yeah. I mean, it inspires us, right? I think that's cool. Everybody, every little geeky kid wants to travel to another planet, right? We're not going.
No. It's going to happen. I think somebody
maybe
will land.
Maybe in my lifetime, but probably not yours. I mean, you're old, right?
It's going to be close.
For yours? No, yeah. For mine, right?
For maybe both of ours. Mine. Only because of politics.
You don't think I'm going to live that long?
No, I don't think so.
Warren's like, I might be 20 years older, but I'll outlive
you're
you.
You're going to wear that lung out.
Warren's like, I might be 20 years older, but I will outlive you. Yeah, so I'm really excited. There's a lot of cool things going on. They're launching that new telescope this year.
Is it this year?
Yeah,
I think
it's supposed to be later this year.
The Hubble's replacement.
Yeah, the Hubble's replacement because, I mean, that was a badass telescope.
It lasted a lot longer than they expected it to.
Yeah, and, you know, well, they had to fix it, 75 times or whatever. But it was a pretty badass telescope. Now they're like the generation Hubble was to the other ones. This one's going to be the Hubble, which is going to be mind-blowing. I can't wait to see images from that. You know, hopefully we'll get to see images from that.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be, you know, they won't have to put the glasses on it like they did the Hubble.
Yeah, right? Oh, hey, yeah. You know, funny thing about these telescopes, man, they need that damn mirror.
And this one's kind of nearsighted, so we're going to go put a pair of glasses on it.
Yeah, we'll figure it out, no worries. But it's NASA, right? So they're like, yeah, it's only going to cost us like $4 billion to fix our billion-dollar telescope, and everybody's like, yeah, not like, hey, build another one and launch it, right? Just leave that one dangling. You know, and this other one's supposed to be out beyond the space junk, right? Like that George Clooney
yeah,
movie.
until it gets there.
Wait, until we add more space junk, yeah. Right? I mean, that's why we got to go to Mars.
Well, what's really cool about you're still talking about space stuff, the Japanese, within the last 6 weeks, launched a satellite that was supposed to figure out a way to get rid of the space junk by putting a electric charge on the objects, which would then force them into the atmosphere and burn up. Well, the satellite had a malfunction.
So now it's space junk?
So it's space junk, too. So it was very sad, but if it had worked, you know, mathematically it does work, scientifically it does work, but they weren't able to actually test it, which was sad. So now we still have space junk. Of course, that's what Phil calls his private parts pretty much
space
every day.
Junk? No, it's empty space junk. So why don't we head out to break? When we come back, Warren, what are we going to talk about?
Motorcycle endurance and then records.
We have a lot of motorcycle talk this week.
Oh, yeah.
Because World Superbike kicked off this week.
And we had a great Supercross.
We had a lot of good racing in World Superbike, too. So we got a ton of that, so we're not going to waste too much time talking about other stuff, and we're going to get right into that and get going. We'll be back. This is The Doghouse on ntnradio.com.
So, Phil, when I say motorcycle endurance, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
WERA.
Well, that actually
World
is pretty
endurance
good.
Endurance Racing Association.
That is actually pretty good, but I was, you know, Iron Butt Association came into my mind.
All right. I think racing, you think old British guys' butts. Old hippies' butts. Right?
Well, the Motorcycle Magazine, motorcycle.com, come out with their top 10 motorcycle endurance records, and it was pretty...
I'm glad it wasn't top 10 old guys riding British bikes' butts.
Well, maybe the first one kind of fits that.
Oh, but, hey.
But the some of these are kind of tongue-in-cheek as we get into them, so...
It is
see
old
how I'm going
butts.
With that? See where I went with that?
Yeah, I see that.
But the number 10 was an Iron Butt ride. In 2011, Mr. Blanchard, they needed to give his first name, which is kind of surprising... rode the Satisfor 1000 in less than 24 hours.
Okay.
At the age of 89.
Whew.
And he did it on a Can-Am Roadster, which, okay, it's a motorcycle or it's not. You know, there's argument there. But for the sake of what I'm saying, an 89-year-old guy riding on a bike counts.
You know, at that age, an endurance record. Is it hard to get on the motorcycle?
I wouldn't know. Ken, is it?
Oh, I just...
Yeah, Ken...
From what I understand, you're close to that today.
No, Ken's still closer.
Well, you know, Ken's actually dead, died of old age.
We're just covering...
We're just covering for him until he comes back.
What's that movie where they drag their dead body around?
Weekend at Bernie's.
Weekend at Ken's.
Weekend at Ken's. That's pretty good for an old guy.
Yeah. 89 years old in 2011. I'm assuming he's still alive, but I have no clue. I didn't look it up.
That put him 95.
That'd be pushing
96.
It.
Yeah, he's probably
he could have. You know, maybe he's out there today trying to.
You know,
another
his family
record.
Listens to the show, and I'm like, yeah, he's probably done. I'm so nice. Wait, so last week I get speaking of dead people, right? So my nephew sent a message to my cousin's kid, who was her grandmother that passed away last weekend. My aunt. And he meant well, but he said, I'm sorry she had to go. And I was like, it's not like a trade in baseball. He's like, well, you know what I mean? I was like, I do, and she did, but that's just not how I'm sorry. So I think I'm going to do that instead of my deepest condolences. I'm just going to be like, sorry they had to go. It's like, Ken, sorry you had to go.
All right, number 9 on the list of top 10 was Dipion Quarterhurry. Yeah, say that 3 times fast. As a member of the Indian Army Signal Corps, rode a motorcycle 125 and a half miles sitting backwards.
Why?
Because he could.
Because it's India and the only thing you can hit there is like cows and
people. Well, that's the same place where you see the guy doing yoga on a motorcycle while he's going down the road.
Yeah, 42 people, the bus motorcycle. So,
but that was, to me, that is pretty impressive. 125 and a half miles riding backwards. That's a bunch of miles.
He's the only person on the bike, right? I'm not getting suckered. I'm not getting suckered here where he's sitting on the tank and somebody else is steering, right?
Yeah, he was the only guy on the
bike. All right, I'm just making sure I'm not getting suckered.
All right, this next one, number 8, is actually a Guinness Book of World Records event. So you can't poo-poo this one. Yeah, but you will anyway.
I can, but
you will
ahead.
Anyway. In 2013, here's your British rider. British rider Paul Otten piloted a Yamaha around Rogers Hills Raceway for 24 hours, racking up 351 miles on a race bike. The mileage isn't close to that of Bushy's road course record, which is coming up in a few minutes, but he basically rode 48 back-to-back motos.
It's a dirt bike track.
No, this one is a race, a paved track, road racing track. He has a dirt track as one a record as well, which I'm getting to.
Okay, I mean, all right.
He has two. He has one on the
track there too.
He has a.
I just pulled up images of the track, and all it's showing me are the dirt tracks.
No, he has both.
Okay.
So the number 7, this one should be close to you. You think this would be an easy record to break, but maybe it's harder than it seems. It has to do with riding a Honda Unicorn. Now, for all you guys out there who don't know what a Honda Unicorn is, I had to look it up. But while, you know, I'm sure Phil wouldn't, because if you ever visit Phil's home, you'd be surprised the number of unicorns he has in his house. It was very disturbing, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But a Honda Unicorn is a 150cc bike built specifically for India. In 2015, Ratnesh Paddy rode 20 miles standing on the seat of his Honda Unicorn without ever touching the handlebars. So that's the Guinness World Record, is 20 miles standing on a motorcycle.
I'm guessing he was probably in sandals and was holding a goat.
See, you can get on anything, can't you?
No images of that, people. No images of that ride.
But there was an actual Guinness record. So, Phil, if you want to set the new record for riding, standing up on a motorcycle.
I'm not sure that bike could hold me.
But the problem is that Phil wouldn't want to stand up on the unicorn. He'd want to sit down on the spike.
Boo. That was funny 20 years ago.
That's all I got. That's all I got. Number 6. This is one of 2 non-motorcycle entries on motorcycle.com's list. But this guy deserves props because even though he's riding 4 wheels, Chang Hyun Chu from China, or South Korea, excuse me, rode 158.7 miles in 24 hours at a rate of 6.5 miles per hour. And what makes this so special is this is the longest journey controlled in a wheelchair controlled by somebody's mouth. So he's like Stephen Hawking riding around in a wheelchair.
And how long did he go?
24 hours, 158 miles. Driving a wheelchair with his mouth. That's wow, impressive.
That's actually impressive because how did they keep it going?
I guess they swap out the batteries every now and then. That's the only thing I can think of.
I mean, that's pretty impressive. So I will not knock that. It must take some serious power.
But it gets better.
Well, it's blow, right? Those things are like a breath.
I didn't go into details, but it gets better. That was his 24-hour endurance record.
He has another one.
He owns another endurance record in 2015, so this wasn't very long ago. He has the longest journey by mouth-controlled motorized wheelchair, covering 17,398 miles across 35 countries. I went, damn!
In a wheelchair.
In a motorized wheelchair.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, I am too.
That's out there, right? Wow. Okay.
Number five. This one is not tongue-in-cheek or anything, but I don't really see where it's an endurance ride, but it is pretty interesting. Following the tragic deaths of his first daughter and his wife, Neil Peart, who's the legendary drummer from Rush, got aboard his BMW and didn't return for a year and 55,000 miles. Anyone wondering how the full story went to this guy healing his heart? He wrote a book about that year on a bike called Ghost Rider, Travels on the Healing Road.
You know, we had a guy on, this was early podcast Doghouse days, right? We were still in Ken's thing. And he did, I want to say he did 8,000 miles in like a month and a half in the summer. 1 year, something like that. He had all 48 continuous continental states.
Contiguous. Yeah, there's that word. Y'all give me a hard time and I got that one
you
right.
The one word you can pronounce. but yeah, so some endurance things are cool. Right, I mean, I would be like, if it was like rode his bike to the most ice cream shops, right? That's or hit every ice cream shop.
Well, there's a guy, I can't think of his name, but his dog's name is Scooter, and he's riding with Scooter as part of it. He did it for a charity, Wounded Warriors, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He went to every Harley Davidson dealership in the entire United States.
Obviously, not with their GPS. he'd still be out there riding around.
Well, hey, I know it's got to be here somewhere.
Doggone, this trip's taking me 400 days longer than I thought.
Yeah, but he finished it up last fall. That was kind of impressive. Him and his dog, riding state to state, dealership to dealership, till he hit all 3,000 plus of them.
Yeah, I would do that for ice cream shops. I don't know about Harley.
There's a lot more ice cream shops, so...
Yeah, right. That's why I need fundraisers, right? People got to bring me money so I can do this. Because I got to buy a cone at each.
and a treadmill to call behind the bike to work it off.
Somebody else, I probably should put, maybe I should do it on a Harley. That way I can push the bike between stops.
Oh, that's just mean.
Oh, hey, that was for you, Dave Meath. I know you would appreciate that. Go ahead.
All right, number four. This one is Bessie Stringfield. This is not one of those. It's really an endurance thing so much, but it's just like a lifetime achievement endurance thing. She's one of the only a few women to ride a motorcycle so extensively in the 1930s. The Motorcycle Queen of Miami, as Miss Stringfield was known, is credited with being the first black woman to ride solo cross-country. She completed 8 solo trips in total and served as a Army motorcycle dispatch rider during World War II.
Okay.
That's a pretty impressive,
That is.
That's kind of lifetime endurance.
Right. That's the motorcycle dispatcher in World War II, I'm going to assume was over in foreign operations, right? Wouldn't be here.
No, they probably had a few here, but most of them were overseas.
That's cool.
Yeah. And in fact, if you're interested in World War II dispatch riders in the United States and Britain, I did a blog post on IJustWantToRide.com.
I will change that, but okay.
Don't. But I got a bunch of videos of how they were trained down in Texas. They would, you know, show them how to crash their bike so they could get cover from and fire your Tommy guns.
Nice.
It was there's a lot of stuff in there. I put a lot of links to videos and some photographs of a dispatch rider. So I just do a Google or Bing search on "I just want to ride dispatch riders" and it'll pull you up. There's my shameless plug for today.
That is your shameless plug. And that was completely shameless. But that's actually really cool. I would like, you know, that's one thing that you don't see a lot of, but I wouldn't mind seeing that in one of the either military museums or even somebody's motorcycle museum, some dispatch bikes and about the history of it. Because I think that could be kind of cool.
Yeah, well, Wheels Before Time down in Tennessee, they got a small section dedicated to the World War II era and the motorcycles, the Harleys and the Indians and a couple of the others. And it's interesting, but it really don't go into the dispatch riding stuff. And you're right. I think somebody should do that because there are plenty of movie clips that have been converted to digital that are interesting to watch. And I put a bunch of them on my blog. But, yeah, there's some cool stuff out there about it. And yeah. I'd like to hear some stories about it. Like the first guy to go into Germany.
Probably on a motorcycle.
First U.S. soldier to go into Germany was an American soldier on a Harley Davidson. He was a dispatch rider.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of cool, right? I mean, there's some interesting history there that I think should be recorded.
Yeah.
Before all those people are gone.
In some kind of permanent display.
Yeah, you know, and I'm sure they probably used same kind of things maybe in Korea too, right?
I'm sure they did. And since Vietnam, I don't think motorcycles have been much in the military, at least not in my lifetime, for sure.
Yeah, but maybe with the Special Forces stuff, if they get that electric motor.
And they did have a 500cc Harley for a little while that they experimented with back in the 90s. But it didn't go very far with it, not because of the bike. It's just they felt the tactics just didn't support it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the hard thing. You got to get, like, big old gun on there.
All right, number three on the list. Now, Ken talked about this about a year ago. So, see if you recall it.
Taco Tuesday? Was that what Ken was talking about?
Might have been. Okay, so it's impossible to have a list of motorcycle endurance records and not include Cannonball Baker, who in 1914 set a transcontinental record of riding 11 and a half days from New York to San Diego. That might seem not much of a feat now, but remember, you know, the brakes, the power, the suspension, the seat, and the frame, everything, and the dirt roads, because there was very few paved roads back then, that the guy had to contend with on his 3,300-mile ride.
Yeah, I mean, that's an impressive thing. I mean, you know, when you see the technology, you know, I'm sure you could probably, but like the route, they didn't really have interstates.
No.
Right, and you got out to a certain point, and there was no more.
Most of the time, they had to follow railroad tracks.
Right, railroad tracks, and there just weren't roads. You know, I believe he did it on an Indian, right? Yes,
I think so.
I think he did it on an Indian. And here's another cool thing about him, and I remember this.
Yes, because he wanted to end up at the Springfield plant.
Yeah, he also raced in the 1922 Indy 500. Right, that's like weird. Weird facts
little,
about that.
Factoid.
Yeah, he was a really cool guy and a big gearhead guy. Right, he is in the, I believe he is in the AMA Hall of Fame.
He should be.
Right, and I'm not sure, but I think he's in the NASCAR Hall of Fame too.
Hmm.
Or he's one of the people they keep talking about being in there. He was. He's a really famous guy, right? Cannonball Baker. So, anyways, that's just my.
Well, in 2011 and again in 2014, Daytona 200 winner Don Imdy, I'm sure I'm butchering his name.
Yeah.
Retraced his route as best he could. So there's been a couple of rides trying to retrace him to show you, and he actually wrote a book about it, Finding Cannonball's Trail.
I cannot imagine that being easy with how much the landscape of the country has changed.
I bet you it's not easy at all. You know, no. Of course, you might have a lot more rails to trails now.
Yeah, right. I mean, it might be a much better ride, and you know, things like bathrooms and showers along the way.
Yeah, I'm sure. You don't have to camp out every night, and maybe you get a hotel.
Get a hotel.
And in this spot next to the Hilton is where Cannonball had to camp out.
He camped there in room 322. I'm going to do that myself. Look, it says here that he pooped over a bucket. So, yeah, I'm just going to have to use the bowl. Oh, look, right here it says stop to eat. And lo and behold, I'm at Whataburger.
All right, number two. This is another actual Guinness record. The longest distance for a motorcycle pilot was attained in October 2014 by South African Matthew McCleavely at the, and I'm going to butcher this for sure, Farsika Freeway Racetrack in Welkom, South Africa. In a 24-hour period, Bushy raced this defunct MotoGP circuit 1,297 times for a total of 2,023 miles. Now, that's impressive in itself, but you got to tag on the fact that he's missing both his legs from an accident.
Ah, that's actually really impressive. I mean, it's we talk about when Chris Ulrich does the two-ups for charity right after Thanksgiving every year,
mm-hmm.
right? And all the miles, how many times he goes around. I don't remember how many times he goes around, but it's something like 60-some-odd circuits or something. Right, because I think he does two. He does a bunch.
Yes,
I mean, we always go, man, that's a lot of riding. You know, especially weaving it back and forth on the bike,
and
you know,
whipping
on the
it
track,
around, yeah.
right? You know, and that's impressive.
And this guy did it almost 2,300 times
with no legs.
With no legs,
that's cool.
Yeah,
that is cool. What is number one?
Number one, drum roll. You didn't even have the drum roll set up, did you? Too late.
Ken loves when I bang on the table.
This is another Guinness Book of World Records. But it has no attribution and no one, you know, registered to actually have done it. But it's in the book as one of the records you could set. So, Phil, this is one that is wide open that you could set.
I think I'm in on this. Go ahead.
I don't think you are. After you hear it, I don't think you're going to want to try.
Go ahead.
So, this is the first, well, actually, it'd be the first person because no one else has done it yet. This is the record for the fastest time to finish a marathon distance race course. Wearing a full motorcycle leather uniform.
I got this.
So you're going to run a marathon, on your feet.
Wait.
This with is your easy. Feet.
I could walk it in the middle of the winter, like Boston or New York.
Oh, that's true.
Right? And if it takes me 4 days, I'm still the Guinness Book record.
For a little while, anyway.
Until somebody breaks. I think I'm going to do that. That's going to be the one. Listen, how badass would it be that's the one, me with my lung and a half, and 400 pounds of me, or 600 pounds, whatever it is, gets to do that, right?
So you'd have to.
I mean,
complete.
Listen, 40. Nobody ruined this. I know there's some smart. It's probably gonna be Hawkeye. Hawkeye's probably gonna be like, oh, I can do that in like 5 hours, and I'll have to stand there and break his leg or something, right?
So 26 miles attempted.
26.1.
Well, 26.1. Okay, get it exact. 26.1 miles. For the purpose of the record, motorcycle leathers are defined as either the full leather bodysuit or matching jacket and trousers made of leather that are designed to be worn on a motorcycle.
Yeah, I got this. All right, if I do it in the middle of winter and just walk it.
Yeah. Especially if it's a two-piece one. You could probably do better in
two-piece. Yeah, no doubt. All right, some Harley leathers. I might even get like Indian leather and be like Indian race team, right? Wrecking crew.
Because you're going to wreck the record.
Because I'm going to wreck that record. I'm going to be the man. I'm going to be all that plus a bag of chips.
So you, anyone out there in our listening audience that think they can beat Phil's? Yeah,
no, let me set it before you beat it, right? Because if you can't beat it, you're truly pathetic.
All right, folks. We're going to go to break. And in a few seconds, we'll be back to talk about Supercross and World Superbike.
I don't know where that accent came from.
I don't know either, but I like it.
I don't. I really don't. I'm not even sure what it was. Yes, we'll be back. We're going to talk some World Superbike. We're going to talk some, a little bit of MotoGP news. We're going to talk some Supercross and lots of good racing out there this weekend. Lots of good, unless you watch the Daytona 500, then that wasn't good racing. But on two wheels, there was a lot of good racing. back here on the Doghouse on NTNRadio.com. Woo! That's
dot com.
Dot com. Sounds like a motorcycle downstairs, don't it?
Does it?
Maybe there is. Maybe there is. Wonder what they're working on down there. Anyways, we had Supercross in Atlanta, and I guess we should mention while we were gone last week, Eli Tomac racked up another win. I'm thinking we were wrong about Tomac, or maybe things are finally clicking for Tomac. Right? I feel like things are finally clicking for Tomac.
It's looking good, yes.
Right? I mean, at least he's, like, kind of credible for a points lead, right? He's kind of, he's still, like, almost 30 points back.
But he's doing well.
But he's doing well.
In each race, he's doing well.
And he's consistent, right? His biggest problem was last year he was not consistent.
No.
But anyways, let's get into the 250.
Well, that was also because he had just recovered from that horrendous crash in motocross.
Yeah, let's get into the 250 East before we go into that. Right? The 250 East race was, I thought, your boy who you picked for winning the championship, he got hurt in the heat one, I think.
That was Christian Craig.
And
this is the one. I love motocross and how they do things. I think they talk about it well. I think they present it well. But it's one of the things they don't do well. In fact, it's one of the few nitpicks I can pick on them with is they never really follow up with what's going on with the racers who go down. You know, we haven't heard anything about how Ken Roczen is doing from them. If you don't look it up yourself, you don't really hear about it. At first they said he'll be back for the LCQ, and when he wasn't, no one said anything.
Well, they did. He didn't. They didn't say anything for the LCQ. I don't think they knew, and I don't know.
But the asterisk team's right there.
Right. One of the things that I don't know is what the concussion protocol is in Supercross now.
See, it'd be nice to hear a little bit about this stuff.
I agree. I mean, Ken Roczen, we knew at the time. That was a mess. And where he is right now, I don't think anybody knows. And I don't think his team's really talking about when he's going to be back.
Well, last week I posted up on Facebook a picture of him with his arm
all stitched up. Yeah.
I counted 70-plus stitches that you could see in the photograph, and you knew there were more.
Yeah.
And he has a metal bar sticking out of his arm. There's no way. I cannot see him coming back at all. For Supercross, and maybe not even for a good chunk of motocross.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. My boy, Adam Ciancerola.
Had a bad start in the final.
He's fast. I mean, he was cranking out the fastest lap times and stuff, but it's not clicking for him yet.
Yeah,
he
finished seventh overall for the race.
Yeah, it's not clicking for him yet. He's sitting there fifth in points, but he's already 15 down to Zach Osborne, who caught a lucky break when Alex Martin
he dumped it.
Well, he took more than he dumped it. He took out Smith. Right? He took out Jordan Smith. I mean, he just, and it wasn't like he hit him and knocked him off. I mean, he wrecked him like a Rossi Marquez wreck. Like a I want to be DeVicioso when I grow up. I mean, Iannone when I grow up.
Well, he also dropped it one other time. I thought that's what you was talking about.
Yeah. I'm hoping that's a bike because if that's a car downstairs, sounds like that, they're in trouble.
Yeah. But this is Zach Osborne's first win.
Yeah.
Good for him. Yeah.
And he's got the points lead with Savacci there in second. Smith still ended up being able to hold on enough points that he's in third. But, I mean, it just totally done. Wrecked his chances of being the points leader, and it was Zach Osborne, like you said, first career win. And he rough-rided it. Did you see how rough he was on people getting there? I mean, he hit everybody he passed.
Well, it's one of my Twitter comments during the race, which, if you had been online, you would have seen it, was this was rubbing his racing and trading paint. I put all these NASCAR references into it because they were definitely each other. Elbows out.
I'm pretty sure he hit a couple of the race officials when he went by because it was like bumper bikes.
It was.
He was just hitting and passing hard. You know, and Supercross is a full contact sport, right?
Yeah, and this track was a lot better than some of the, for passing purposes, a little bit better than the ones we've been seeing recently.
Yeah, I really like the sand section.
Oh, my God. That's some of the other tweets. I was surprised that the sand trap didn't capture one of the bikes.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of the sand traps that Phil could probably never find his balls.
I'm not sure I would lose them. But okay. Oh, golf balls. I don't play golf.
All the bikes would need a new paint job after the sandblasting they were getting.
Yeah, and the tear-offs and stuff. And then the other thing I noticed is one of the tabletops, right? Normally, you don't see this in a tabletop, or maybe it was the camera angle. But one of the tabletops developed a groove in it.
That wasn't a camera angle. That was for sure happened.
Right, but maybe we never noticed it before.
I think it's the way that you come out of the turn in front of the tabletop and hit that. I think it was the only way you could land on it.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know if I've ever seen a tabletop develop a groove in it.
Now, getting back to the sand trap, this is one note I had made, was the only person, and then I'm going to jump ahead a little bit to the 450s, the only person that had a clean uniform, jersey, whatever you want to call it,
was Dungy.
could still see everything on the front of his.
Yeah, everybody else, it was just a mess.
You could even, some of these guys, you could even tell who their sponsors were.
Yeah, but Osborne bullied his way to the front, and I'm not picking on him, right?
No.
I respect that. I mean, that was rough riding. That was tough riding. And if Supercross doesn't say that that's wrong, then I don't say that's wrong. You know what I mean? And he got out there, and he's been a long time coming. That's somebody who we've been hot on the show for a while and stuff, so I was glad
to
see that. And then in the 450s, right, speaking of people with bad starts, Tomac did not have a good start.
Him and Musquin both.
Musquin might still be driving around.
Well, Musquin finished fifth.
He ended up fifth.
But he was like down in, 17th or 18th or something like that. He had a great race.
Yeah.
To get back to where he was.
And so did Tomac. Tomac was as far down as, I believe, 15th.
Was he that far?
At one point, when they first dropped back on that crappy start, they were only two spots between them.
Okay, so yeah, he did a great job getting back up there.
Yeah, and he was fast. Had it been a longer race, he might have caught Dungy. I don't know. It's hard. You know, you get to the end, you get tired. Well, I'll tell you the one thing that we learned out of that is we can no longer say that Tomac can't make it into the finish a race because of his endurance.
No, he definitely
right?
has
He's in
it
shape.
Now. Yes, he is.
Guys who aren't in shape, you know, like Justin Barcia, you know, but Barcia's never really been in shape. Bogle had a good race until he didn't anymore. You know, he was doing okay. I thought the lead Dungy, the race that Tomac and Musquin did to get back in and bag it and, you know, some of these guys, it was good to see other guys up front.
Yeah.
Right? But
talking about the stamina, Malcolm Stewart did well in the heat race and got in, and he looked good at the beginning of the final, but he just faded and ended up in, 15th place.
Yeah.
So he's another one that I think the stamina is what, you know, you're right. You know, he looked good and then he faded.
Yeah. He had a little rough ride too, but you know, like, there's a lot. I think that's the difference between the guys who win 450 races. I mean, there's not that many guys that have won 450 races in history. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the difference is your physical conditioning, you know, and your ability to ride. Dungy's racking up an impressive amount of wins. He's got another win. He looked really good, and he needs to because, you know, these other guys are not too far back in the points. Right? I mean, he's got a 24-point lead on Musquin and 26 on Tomac.
You're talking about Dungy, yeah.
Yeah. But you need to keep putting the pressure on, right? I mean, I'd like to see Dungy win another championship. Right? Because I think over the years he's been one of the best riders we've seen.
Yeah.
You know,
and if he gets it, he'll deserve it.
And he does deserve it.
And if he doesn't win it, he's definitely going to. You can tell that he's not going to go out.
But he doesn't look like the same Dungy we've seen.
No, I personally don't think he's recovered from that, you know, broken neck.
You know, there were rumors that he would retire at the end of the season, you know, at the end of 2017.
Supercross or motocross?
At the end of motocross.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. Maybe see him do a Monster Energy
shootout
to try and win the $1 million, but it wouldn't really shock me to see him do that. But, you know, other than that, I mean, it was some great racing. There was a lot of great racing in the back. And then we should probably get right into World Superbike because there was a ton of great racing in World Superbike, even in World Supersport. You know, Ken, if Ken was here, he'd be eating the crow tonight because we were talking about World Supersport with PJ Jacobson, and he's like, yeah, I don't see him being on no Envy Agusta to win the race, right? You know, yep. He's not going to be competitive, blah, 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 blah. And lo and behold, PJ Jacobson comes out and gets himself on the pole, right? And of course, we're going to talk PJ Jacobson because he's American, and that's what we are. We're Americans, right? But PJ Jacobson got himself on the pole, and then he just had a real crappy race. He actually crashed twice, right?
Yeah.
He went through the dirt twice, and they red flagged the race at one point, which got him back in. But an Envy Agusta won. Robbie Rolfo gets his first win in his rookie season on an Envy Agusta. Baldolini was fast, too. There's no doubt that the Envy Agusta has come to play, right?
Yep.
I mean, they were out there. Keenan Sofoglu wasn't there, right, because he's still recovering from his injury. And which is good. I'm glad PJ Jacobson.
Somebody else had a chance.
Well, I'm glad PJ Jacobson didn't get a zippy, right?
He scored some
points, right? Although 25 would have been a lot better than 10, PJ. But, you know, he came off, he did a little dirt track in with it. He ran it off one other time, came off it once, and then dirt biked it once. So, but, you know, the Envy Agusta's fast. It's not a joke bike.
I think you're 100% correct on that.
It is not a joke bike.
But do you really think Ken would eat crow? He would come up with something that says...
Yeah, he would come up, well, you know, he finished sick. You know, Ken would say something retarded like that. So we'll just kind of skip on that. But then it was good racing, right? I mean, the World Supersport race, even with PJ, because PJ Jacobson had fallen all the way back to like 17th, and he was cranking out the fastest laps in traffic.
Yeah.
Right, and then they had a bunch of riders come off, and somehow, and like with two turns to go, like half the field wiped, and somehow, you know, because he was in like 17th, and the thing that sucks is, as I was trying to avoid social media,
so you wouldn't get the results,
right? Because people were kind of bugging the crap out of me about that, right? And I was like, dang, oh no, should we?
And it's not too late if you want to join.
If you
want to
get in the pool, right?
Pool.
Because you're not that many points behind most of us. But PJ Jacobson, with like two turns to go, there's a big crash, and PJ was like in 14th, and I'm like, I saw something that said he was in sixth place. How does this happen? And then like eight bikes go down, and I was like, oh. So there was a lot of junk. The last turn of that looked like the NASCAR race, right? It's just a big pile of junk in the one corner.
Crashes everywhere.
But it's a great track, the drafting and stuff, the passing. Everybody was close. And then we got to watch the World Superbike races, right?
From Phillips Islands, Australia.
And, you know, Rayo was on the pole in the first race. We started out normal, right? You got your qualifying time and stuff. And they went out there, and I don't ever remember seeing, and I wish Ken was here because he's been watching racing longer than you have, but I don't ever remember seeing five or six guys in World Superbike battling for the lead like that.
They were definitely, it was back and forth.
Back and
third
forth
going
the
to
whole
first,
time.
Fourth going to first.
Fifth going to first.
It was
first
all
going
over the
to
place.
Fifth. Right? I mean, they were all over the place. It was Rhea, Davies, Sykes, Lowe's, Forays.
Melandry,
until Melandry dumped it.
Yeah, he was looking good early on.
Yeah, he was looking strong early on. And I thought, oh, man, I should have picked Melandry. I went with Davies because I thought this is his season. And they were all over the place. They were back and forth on each other. It was the 30th year of 30th year of World Superbike, too. We should have mentioned that.
Oh,
right?
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know because they did mention it.
They
in the
mentioned
race.
It, yeah. But there was a lot of battling back. It's the new Honda bike, right?
It didn't do too well.
Which did not look good at all.
I think they still got a lot of adjustments to do that. And then Hayden was Hayden and his teammate, who I'm forgetting at the moment, both of them were complaining about the tires on the bike as well. So they had
Stefan Brattle,
yeah. So they had problems with the tires, and the bikes just neither of the bikes really looked competitive. To be honest with you.
No, the new Honda needs work, yep. Right? I mean, it needs work.
And you're talking about the racing going back and forth in Superbike. It was just doing back and forth in this race as well. You know, and on lap 13, there was only 3 seconds between the top 14 bikes.
Yeah, right. And most of the time last year, we were seeing Johnny Rea pull out to a 5-second lead and be gone.
Yeah, and then no one ever talked about him until he crossed the finish line.
You know, he got out front, and it was like, all right, well, now we're going to see him lay down the laps and go. And he couldn't break away from the group, especially with the draft, right? Anybody mm-hmm. who got out a little bit front, the 4 or 5 bikes behind him could team up and catch him.
Yeah, well, on lap 10, Rea got, you know, out-drugged by Lowe's because Lowe's come behind him, pulled up beside him, and beat him to the turn.
Yeah, that Yamaha, where they came back last year at a World Superbike, now their second season, the Yamaha's no joke.
Nope.
And Lowe's, for the first time in 2 years, Lowe's has stayed on 2 wheels. Right? He finished both races.
Yes, he did. In fact, Brits were in the top 5 spots of the first race.
Yeah. Well, they were dominant last year in there, too. But he looked strong, and the Yamaha bike looked strong. The Ducati looked strong. The Kawasaki's looked strong. This is going to be a fun. Even the MV Agusta of Camier looked good. Right? Not as good as they looked in Supersport, but definitely looked good. This is going to be a tough.
It is
tough
now,
season.
And hopefully it gets better if Honda figures out what's going on. But obviously there are practice sessions and everything. Something's not clicking, and I don't think it's the riders because Hayden's not. You know, he's still pretty good. And
he's a little long in the tooth.
Yeah, but Bradle's been.
He'd probably say toothuses.
and
Brattle.
Brattle's is, you know,
but
he's
Brattle's
done okay.
But Brattle's coming out of prototype bikes, right?
Well, yeah, but still.
So he's back on a heavier bike and stuff, so it's a little different. I'm not taking anything away from him. I just don't think the bike's there. You know, and then talking about the tires, and it's like, A, you get to choose the compound you want, and B, everybody has the same tire manufacturer, mm-hmm. right? So that says to me, probably not the tires, son. You know, but whatever. I'm not gonna get into an argument with Hayden and Brattle unless they're on the air, and then I'll argue with them. Why not? So if you know Nikki Hayden, tell him to give us a call. Watch that happen and him yell at me and then make fun of me. But that's okay.
I'd be okay with that.
I'd be totally fine with that. But yeah, Rea and Davies. So then we go into the second race. And it's the World Superbike
Re-Rack.
Oh, that's a good one. Re-Rack. I have no idea. So Alex Lowe's ended up on pole.
Because Rea won the race, and for winning the race, he gets to go into ninth position at the start of the second race.
Right. And Davies started 8th, Sykes 3rd, Vandermark 6th, Laverty 5th,
and
Torres 4th.
Lowe's finished 4th in the first race, which puts him on the pole.
No, he finished 7th in the first race.
He finished 4th.
Oh, 4th, that's right. Well, that's different than what they announced the first time. So I have no idea how that all worked. But Lowe's ended up on the pole.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were like, we're going to see how this happens. Rea and Davies made it through the traffic pretty quick.
Well, Flores, he started off, looked real good at the very beginning, for the first few seconds, but he was in the top, you know, 4 or 5 there for a long time. But at the end of the first lap, even with the re-racking, you know, Rea had moved up to 4th place. Lowe's was in 1st. Davies was in 6th, and Sykes was in 7th.
Yeah.
So
it didn't change much.
Yeah, you know, and by the end of the seven laps in, it was Rea, Davies, and Lowe's.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. What does it gain the sport?
Yeah, I'm not sure what it gained. The only thing that it maybe gained was no breakaway. Again, we had 4 or 5 bikes battling at the very end of the race.
Well, you had 2 battling at the very end of the race because there was only 25th of a thousandth of a second difference between 1st and 2nd.
Yeah, definitely a photo finish. I was hoping Davies pulled it off, mainly because I had him in the pool.
I had him too. I don't feel bad picking Davies in the pool for the second race because that was so close.
Yeah. Well, I had him for the double. So I fell some points.
I had Rea and Davies. But
yeah, you know, I mean, it was tight right down there to the end. And believe it or not, Melandri in 3rd was only 0.25 seconds back. You know, the top 4 were all within a second of each other.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they were moving.
But you had that in the first race, too, without the re-rack.
Yeah.
So, again, what does this re-rack, restock do for the sport? I don't know yet.
It does nothing yet.
Maybe as the season progresses, we'll see something.
Yeah.
But I think these top bikes are so good, and these top riders are so good,
yeah,
that they're just going, all they're doing is increasing the chances of accidents with lower performance bikes and riders.
I think what they were trying to do were to get the guys to burn some tire out so that at the end of the race, other guys had a chance to win.
Or was this another participation trophy moment?
I'm going to hope not. I'm hoping that they did that so that they could have...
You guys are so good, we had to put you at the back of the... Halfway through the season,
you know,
are we going to see a change in the rules and take... First through third now are finished starting in device three positions?
I don't think you see that. You might not even see this rule package last because I don't think it's accomplishing what they want. I think they wanted the guys. I think after watching the first race, right? Because last year, you got to remember, the Kawasaki's were very dominant for a long time.
Yes.
And then Ducati caught up. I think what they were trying to do was to bring all four manufacturers to the forefront by letting the guys on, you know, by the guys who are winning the race, having to race guys to get by them, so you wear the tire out, so it slows you down at the end of the race, so more people can be there.
And in this first race, it didn't happen.
The end of the first race was probably
in the second race of this weekend, it didn't happen. By the seventh lap, all the top contenders were back at the front.
Yeah, where they should be.
And they did their passing in the easy places where they didn't burn their tires up.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what happens at some of the other tracks. You know, I know Phil Bile has a lot of drafting and stuff like that, mm-hmm. right?
So yeah, you definitely saw that. Close.
So it'd be interesting to see. I just don't see it accomplishing what they wanted, right? But maybe a tighter track, maybe it might.
Is that Bruno? Is that the one that's really tight?
Yeah, Bruno's pretty tight. A lot of the European tracks are tighter.
Yeah, maybe it'll work out. But after this first race, I see no benefit to it.
I don't yet. Right, I'm with you.
Other than participation trophies.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I hate saying that, but the MV Agustas are no joke. Yamaha is back in World Superbike, looking important.
And Honda's looking
crappy.
Yeah.
Ducati is looking really good.
Kawasaki is still the top bike so far after race one. Ducati is a close second.
But they're not going to walk away with it. No. What do we got? One, two weeks the next round at Motul in Thailand.
And then
MotoGP in the following week after that.
And Supercross next week is in Toronto.
Toronto, and then Daytona, the outdoor-indoor track.
Hopefully all the racers in the going to Canada get their passports straightened out this year.
Unless they're people we root against. All right, we'll all be back next week. I don't know if Ken will be here. We might send him on the SpaceX tour.